Thanks for joining us. You can always catch the latest sermon online, but we sure would love to see you join us in person to celebrate and support each other in our love for God, our neighbors, and this church. We are South Britain Congregational Church. No matter who you are or where you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. And now, enjoy another great Sunday sermon, and we hope to see you soon.
We conclude our series of sermons on the Ten Commandments today. We're looking at the last two. And if you recall, the Ten Commandments are really general statements, first principles on which a society is based, and then you have the more specific laws that come after it. But this in a very simplified form, very edited form, are the commandments from Exodus 20. God spoke all these words. He said, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." And I would put in here, therefore, in thanksgiving, in appreciation, you will live this way. Okay? You shall have no gods except me. You shall not make yourself a carved image. You shall not utter the name of the Lord your God to misuse it. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor your father and mother so that you may have a long life in the land the Lord your God has given to you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. This summer we've been looking at the Ten Commandments as they're found in the book of Exodus. Last week, if you remember, we looked at murder, adultery, and stealing. A lot of books and movies have been based on those three commandments. And today I did something wrong, I'm sure. Today we're going to look at the last two commandments. You shall not bear false witness, and you shall not covet. You shall not bear false witness. That commandment was originally meant for the courtroom. And you just can't have justice if you have people, witnesses, telling lies, if they're perjuring themselves. So this is a commandment originally meant for truthfulness and testimony when you're in court. And there's a proverb that says the person who speaks the truth, the witness who speaks the truth, saves lives. But the witness who lies betrays and shall face punishment. Now, although this was originally meant for the courtroom, I think it argues for a wider application, and that is for an argument for integrity in our own lives and in the society in which we live. And just think of some of the headlines in the papers recently. We had the school scandal with the celebrities. Felicity Hoffman said, when she was pleading guilty, she said, "Though I meant the best for my child, it doesn't excuse breaking the law and engaging in dishonesty." And you know, some of those parents with means were paying off people to change their children's answers to questions on college entry exams. They were paying coaches to turn a blind eye and you know, recommend their kids. And they had kids who had never played on a sports team, you know, representing themselves as, you know, very active on the rowing team and the soccer team and all the rest. Dishonesty. And just on Friday, did you see the newspaper? Can you read it from where you're sitting? It says, Ford new cars defective. This was on the NBC News the night before, that Ford put cars on the market, the Fiesta and the Focus, put them on the market, knowing quite well that the transmissions in those cars were defective. Why they do this, I don't know. Think of the robocalls you receive, the ones that come right at supper time. You know, your cousin Charlie is in prison in London and needs $500 to get out. Yes. It's the IRS saying you're in debt to the IRS, you haven't paid your money, and they need your credit card, or else you're going to be in big trouble. I had a friend who actually worked with the IRS, and he said, that's strange, I work with the IRS, and I'm licensed to carry. And click. This church is going to be part of a group locally in Southbury and Woodbury that will sponsor a refugee family coming in sometime this year. And that brought to mind, again, how some of these groups will prey on the most vulnerable. My wife, as you know, has been very active with refugee families over in the Brookfield area. And on one occasion, there was a family from Iraq, and these people are all legal. Family from Iraq, been through hell. Goodness knows what they were through, you know, in terms of relatives shot in front of them and all the rest of it. They'd been through a terrible time. And they received a letter purporting to be from the FBI saying, again, you're in trouble. Unless you pay this money, you'll be put in prison. Now, you know, some of those robocalls are very sophisticated. And it's very easy for any of us to fall for it. But imagine a family who's brand new to this culture. And they don't know. And they showed this letter to my wife. And actually, at the time, the church where I was interim had FBI agents from New Haven in it. And you know, the letter looked strange to me. It looked official, but the language was a bit stilted. And I gave it to the agents, and they said, no, this is a hoax. So there are people who have just no morals or anything. They're so willing to take advantage of even the most vulnerable in society. On a lighter note, the example of integrity in society that just catches my fancy, goes back to Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville, Kentucky has a seminary where young men and women are preparing for the ministry and the priesthood. And at the time, that seminary still had a bookstore. And you know, a bookstore in a seminary will have a New Testament section, an Old Testament section, history section, theology section, pastoral relations section, and an ethics section. And over the ethics section, there was a sign, please do not steal the ethics books. I can't imagine. Here are young men and women who are going into the ministry swiping books. When I was very young, I read a biography of David Livingston, who was a missionary, an explorer, an abolitionist. And there was a scene in his early life when his father was dying. He was just a young person. And his father called him into the room before he died. And he said to David Livingston, "We have been a poor family, but we have always been an honest family. Be honest, David." Those were his last words to his son, "Be honest, David." And I was at a very impressionable age at that time, and I got the message. And I think honesty, integrity, is something we all want to strive for in our society and in our daily lives. That's the 9th commandment. The 10th commandment, do not covet. And this is different from all the others, because the others deal with outward actions. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. They're all outside actions. But to covet is something else. It's in here. It's in the depths of our hearts, our motivations, our thoughts. You shall not covet. And that makes it very hard. Because I suspect that most of us, including myself, have coveted at one time or another. Is that true? I don't know if you've seen this cartoon, but there's a cartoon of four pastures, four fields, joined together, side by side, with fencing. And in each pasture, there is a cow. And each cow is sticking its head through the fence to eat the grass in the neighboring field. And the theme is, the grass is always greener on the opposite side. Now, to covet means to want something really badly. It's looking at your neighbor and wanting his spiffy car. I'd like a sports car like that. Wanting his wife or husband. Wanting his house. Wanting his job. You know, you look at your neighbor, and how come his daughter got into that school when my daughter was turned down for that school? How come that neighbor is sort of svelte, built just right, and my tummy is hanging over my belt? To covet is to want something that really belongs to someone else. And there's a sense of injustice, of unfairness, mixed in with I don't know what, but the sense that you should have what that neighbor really has. It's your right. And that can get you into big trouble. I remember Oscar Wilde, of all people, had a fable. And this fable concerned a holy man in the Libyan desert. This is a very religious person. He's sitting out in the desert all day. And he has a face that's serene. He's praying all day. He's meditating all day. He's a real holy man. And around him are all these little devils. And they're trying to subvert him. They're trying to attack him. and they try, you know, seduction, doubt, fear, they try everything. And the senior devil, who's keeping an eye on these little ones, gives a critique of their approach, and he says, "You're doing it all wrong. Watch me. Watch what I do." The senior devil comes forward to the holy man and says, "Hey, did you hear the news? Your brother was just promoted Bishop of Alexandria. And according to Oscar Wilde, a dark cloud of envy falls down across that serene face." This commandment, I think, does not mean that we shouldn't want to improve our lives or learn from other people or have other people as mentors, you know, to be a doctor or a teacher like that person. It doesn't mean that we don't want to grow ourselves and learn from others. But it does mean that we're forbidden to really look at what somebody else has, and we have no right to, and want that for ourselves. You know, making those envious comparisons. Why does she have that and I don't? Why has she got that and I don't? I should really have that. Making those envious comparisons leads to nothing but trouble for our own lives and for everyone else. It's a good thing to stay away from. The children of Israel, when they came out of slavery in Egypt and Moses was leading them, the children of Israel believed that God was concerned about the way they lived, about the way they interacted with one another. And they believed that they were accountable to that God for how they lived and how they conducted themselves. They were responsible. And Moses, with the Ten Commandments, remember the job he had on his hand. He's bringing out a people who have no experience of freedom, no experience of self-government. They're just a motley crew of disorganized ex-slaves. And he is able to bring those people together as a nation. And one of the ways he does it was with these foundational principles, the Ten Commandments. And I think those Ten Commandments are kind of universal, a lot of them. And if we take them seriously, I think we'll find that they help us, even today, to make good decisions and good choices in our lives. Amen.